Let's go.
It says recording. The timer is going up. How many times will it take to record this?
As many as we need to, because it's exciting. And how many hours is Lydia going to waste on making this actually go out? Woo! All of the hours. I like how when we were planning this re-recording, because obviously due to technical issues, we unfortunately have to re-record this entire section. Thank goodness I didn't have to re-record the actual interview that we'll be listening to shortly, but every single time, we just keep on trying, something keeps on breaking, and then we're like, oh, well, at least we're not going to do it on a Friday again to get all the Friday wild energy. Nope, it's Friday again, everybody. Woo!
I just thought about that, except now it's Friday afternoon, so it's more kind of wild than Friday morning is. But anyway, we have a guest today, which is exciting.
We do. First ever guest, who will be joining me, Lydia Vasileva.
Not me, Paul Harris. What I mean is Lydia had the conversation, but I was there in spirit. I don't think I was.
Yes,
there we go.
Well, it cannot be the Wandering Tech Podcast without a Paul Harris. So you were obviously there with us in spirit. And most importantly, we'll firstly talk a little bit about our esteemed guest, but also after the interview itself, me and Paul will have a little bit of a conversation, discussion around the main topics that touched our hearts and our heartstrings throughout the interview, and things that really resonated with us and things that we find really important throughout the interview. The interview itself is just jam-packed. And I keep on talking about it. Like, I think it's best just to, you know, give an introduction to the interviewee and our first guest and just jump.
Let's do it. So this week we have Rob Dean, who is a well-known name in pre-sale circles, multiple-time Demofest speaker, currently head of pre-sales at the Access Group, and is leading a world-class team of solution consultants there. Overall, anyone who has met and knows Rob knows that he's just a really lovely person. And
he's lush.
He's
just so nice.
He really is. He really is lovely. So please don't inundate him, though, with a request to have a virtual coffee. But Rob is great. If you ever see him in the street, just stop him and go, hey, Rob, I think you're great. No, but
He deserves it.
But on that note, let's get into it. Here's the interview.
What are the pressures currently on pre-sales teams, Rob?
We talked about a little bit about the different pressures now the pre-sales teams and pre-sales leaders are under, in terms of we've gone through this huge change since the pandemic in terms of our whole working environment. And I think that the biggest impact way that we are now starting to see, people are starting to acknowledge that the power sits with the buyer now. From a pre-sales perspective, we've gone from being this kind of traditional function, which sat as what I always classed as masters of the mid funnel, which, you know, still rings true to some degree, whereby, you know, we are sat very much centrally in that kind of discovery and demonstration phase. And obviously there's always exceptions to the rule, but I think as we spoke about before, because of the external locus that is impacting pre-sales, we're moving left and right in terms of what we'd class as our sales process. We're being challenged to deliver content or digital assets that impact earlier in the sales cycle. Equally, we're then often being brought in later in deal cycles for a variety of reasons. And if we consider actually that, you know, it's not really a sales process now, it is a sales wheel, right? It's a sales flywheel. Yeah. You know, realistically,
what a sales circle.
It is. It's a sales circle. It's exactly that. It's a sales circle. And, you know, we have this almost infinite regression in terms of constantly going back in to try and either upsell, cross-sell, resell, however we want to refer to it. But, you know, once we've got a customer on board, oftentimes we then become much more part of a go-to-market motion than necessarily being what we would traditionally class ourselves as, pre-sales solution consultants. Let's not go down the naming convention route here today. But the reality is that it means that as pre-sales individuals, we have to expand both our reach, we have to expand our influence. And the most important thing is that we then have to expand our internal network within an organization. We have to make sure that we are able to see the solution through a variety of lenses, through the lens of the customer, through the lens of sales, through the lens of marketing, through CS, etc. And in doing so, it means that we also have to then ensure that we create a network with all of those different functions. So, you know, being central to that kind of go-to-market process is so in inherent in everything we do now in terms of whether we're looking to move into pre-sales, where they're currently in pre-sales, where we're looking to get promotion within pre-sales, whether we want to move into leadership and we need to then take on the responsibility and the privilege of being a leader. Whatever that is, the reality is that we have to understand that the changing dynamic is one that is here and is going to continue to change with other factors like generative AI and all of the other stuff that's going to start changing the way that we can interact and the way that we can deliver information to both our internal stakeholders as well as our customers and prospects. And that changing paradigm is one which is going to mean that as pre-sales, change is going to be our friend.
I have so many notes just from that one statement there, Rob. So I'll go through it chronologically.
Yeah, please.
but I just wanted to summarize like what I really like what you're saying there. Whilst historically and still realistically, let's be honest, in a lot of organizations we are as you call us, and I love that, like masters of the mid funnel. It sounds like now the direction or our location really within this change is quite central, right? So from the middle to the center of a lot of these grand changes that are happening within organizations. But question, when we were talking about buyer enablement and like the buyer journey and focusing more and understanding really that our focus should be more on the buyers themselves, why do you think now is an actual pressure versus, because buyer enablement is not a new term. Well, relatively speaking, it is a new term, but it's not something that we announced like, you know, or we started thinking about three months ago. It's been now, what, 3, 4, 5 years even that we already are talking through this. But do you think that most organizations now are just now catching up to this idea?
There have been a few changes within organizations that suddenly the realization of what the buyer journey means in terms of the way that we have to engage with our target addressable and target service market has meant that now, in particular, we've started to see what I like to class as the consumerization of B2B behavior. I think the reality is that the expectation of the buyer is one that is now firmly entrenched in the consumer experience. Because of that, the laggards that were previously in the market have started to catch up with just things like delivering video and other stuff. So actually, they're starting to see the power of three-dimensional and more interactive buyer experiences. I think equally now, complexity of the buyer experience are actually being understood by more organizations. And if I take ours, for example, now in terms of do a lot of the product enablement, do start talking about the impacts of what we're trying to do in terms of trying to create these almost these customer interlocks between our sales process and the buyer journey. And that means then that what we do is that there's different stages, is the way that we engage with the buyer is different to what it was before. And because we're acknowledging the fact that there has been a fundamental shift in the way that buyers want to engage with software vendors. And I wouldn't say it's something that's happened overnight. I think there's been a gentle wave of change that's come through. I think a lot of buyers have met with inertia, and where they've met with inertia, they've decided to go with organizations that are meeting the needs that they have in terms of the way they want to buy and how they need. If you think about it, you and I have sold solutions, right? We've sold software. We know how to sell software. We understand the challenges of the buyer because we've done so many sales cycles. You know, for many of our buyers out there, this, they may not be first gen buyers, but they're not going out and buying technology day in, day out. So when it comes to the actual buying journey, they're looking for advice and insight. They're looking to be able to de-risk that process, because actually, go back to the book that Matt Dixon kind of created post-pandemic, which was The Jolt Effect, this notion of the fear of messing up. The fact that the status quo is often the biggest competitor in any deal cycle now, above and beyond any competitor, is one which is challenging the way that we sell. And it means that more often than not, now we have to acknowledge that we can't just go in with all of the fear and of missing out and all of that FUD stuff that we've done in the past. We now de-risk the buying process for the buying committee. And that's the reality of today. And if you look at some of the Gartner reports around how you win modern B2B buyers, they talk about the hybrid buying approach reduces the amount of buyer regret by a factor of 2, I think it is, something like that, by having both a digital journey for the buyer as well as an ability to then engage with physical beings, i.e. us, at the point at which they need it. And I think that's the thing that's changed. I think it's that consumer expectation coupled with the ability for then being able to engage with vendors and get the insights they want. And that's been a gentle change.
From my experience and from talking to other folks within the field as well, it's definitely the consumer experience requirements change. That has been the gentle push that was going to happen sooner rather than later. Because as you said, it's based on what our experiencers are, you know, in the B2C environment, buying cars, buying things on Amazon. Like, there is a certain level of expectation that slowly but surely is shifting over to B2B. My personal opinion is also that there was a little bit of an acceleration of that point because of the pandemic pre-sales boom, because I was part of that boom. I was hired into pre-sales during that time. And there was a huge influx of this sudden realization that you do need more people to be doing more of this work. But then post-pandemic, the realization and the actual financial perspective on that massive boom showcase itself, in the sense of, actually, we can't afford all of these people to do this, so but we still need to move forward with what is happening. So how do we do that? I wonder if there is a correlation there as well when it comes to perpetual versus subscription. Because that boom, from my experience, also started off or was a result of directly companies focusing more on becoming subscription. And I'm basing this mostly from the infrastructure side of things. Very open to hear like what was happening on your side of the fence at the meantime. But I remember like that was a time where all of like the hardware vendors suddenly, magically, overnight became software vendors. It's like, ah, okay. So there's something happened there. Something that was financially more beneficial for these companies to start thinking subscription first. And it was because, you know, subscription companies look more profitable in the long term because of recurring revenue. So I think it's all of these three things sort of combined, like the time post that pandemic boom that has sort of occurred, then that consumer experience slow and gradual change, plus that sudden switch to, oh no, we need to be subscription first.
I agree. I think that, look, if we go back a little bit further, right, to the early 2000s, there was that pre-cloud wave that came through where we talked about information technology in the context of big I, small t, right? Suddenly, it wasn't IT that was buying technology, it was the business. And a lot of that was brought about by SaaS and the changing nature of software. And if you think about how that's continued through, the reality is that every single market that we operate in now, whether you're in pure technology in the API frameworks and cybersecurity and all that kind of stuff, versus the MarTech space, the RevTech space, all of these other areas, they're so saturated now with vendors. From a buyer perspective, it's really tough for them now to differentiate. And it means that actually the best of the best are changing the way that they actually deliver message to market, because they acknowledge the fact that the buying groups and the buying public that they're engaging with are a different breed. It's not about necessarily the technology per se. It's the ability of that technology to solve a problem in that organization. That's the difference.
It's a different set of buyers.
It is. Gen Z buying group that's coming through now, their engagement and the way they wish to engage is going to, again, continue to change the nature of the way that buyers buy, because they're much more, they're not like me. I'm a digital immigrant, and I'm proud to say, right? I'm not digitally native. I've had to pull myself screaming and kicking sometimes into the digital age, but I've done it nonetheless, because unless I do, I am not able to keep up with the pace of change that we see today. And the reality is that pace of change is impacting the way people buy as well, because it's being, you know, reinforced by the changing buying public that comes with it. And so on us as pre-sales, that means that if we go back to that kind of original point about the influences and influence that and the impact that's having on pre-sales, you're right, that boom that came during the pandemic and post-pandemic into the profession was fantastic. The reality is now to deliver value back to the business. And let's think about it. We've got to continually drive and deliver outcomes to the business. To do that, we now have to extend our reach, because it's not as simple as simply saying, I'm doing this many discovery calls, or I'm doing this many demos in a in a given time frame, we've now got to prove out that we can influence the buying cycle or the buying circle, right? We've got to influence the buying circle in as many ways as we possibly can, digitally, traditionally, however we can do it. And that's going to continue to change.
You pre-answered one of the questions, my last question I had actually had on this topic, which is when we were talking exactly about expanding the influence and the reach that we have within an organization. Why should we, especially from the perspective of an individual contributor, why should I go above and beyond what is in my, you know, contractually, what am I supposed to do? Especially if it is, oh, you're here to do a specific subtype of work. And as awful as it sounds, but for you to keep your job, for you to continue to grow within this career, if that is something that you do want to achieve as an individual contributor, that is really the next logical step that you have to take. And that leads us beautifully into the next topic that I wanted to talk to you about, which is you, Rob, as a pre-sales leader, as someone who, you know, has a team, a growing team, and what is it that you're looking for when it comes to the quality pre-sales people that you want to bring on board with you on this now circular journey that you're going to have to take people through?
It's almost like as if we planned this discussion out, isn't it, with the way it's segueing, right? I'm going to start with two things, right? Leadership for me is a privilege. It genuinely is. And I think you have to make sure that for anyone going into leadership that you understand that I believe, particularly in pre-sales, you've got to be people first. You've got to be a people first leader. And that's how you get the best from your teams. That's how I've learned from mentors and great leaders in the past. And that's how I'll continue to try and help my work for my team to be the best they can be. People learn very quickly that actually, and I use this phrase, you know, stop being the picture and being the frame, right? That's what great leadership is about. It's about
I love that. It's
living vicariously through your team. That's what makes seeing people succeed and seeing them become great is what really is what drives me as a leader. And the reason I talk about this is because if you've got the right leader, then the people coming into that business should be able to, no matter what background, no matter where they come from in terms of cultural heritage or whether male, female or otherwise, whatever their background, they should have somebody who constantly wants to make them be, have them turn up, be the best person they can be, but ultimately succeed the best way they can be. Whether that's in terms of as an individual contributor, whether that's moving into leadership themselves, whether that leader succession planning, whatever else. And the only way we can do that really is by looking for people. We have to continuously look for diversity in our teams because, who is it, Steve Jobs, I think it was said, you don't go and hire great people and tell them what to do. You hire great people so you can get them to tell you what to do, right? I'm not a massive Jobs fan, I'll be honest with you, but I do like some of the stuff he said. And I think that's right. And I think the first thing is that you want to have both a diverse team in terms of diversely equitable and make sure that you've got the right spread of kind of knowledge and background and experience. That's the first thing. But you really want to make sure that people can be their authentic selves. And by allowing the people to be their authentic selves, you allow them to be the best that they can be. So making sure that you adhere to that sort of thing. When it comes to recruitment and getting the right people, there's a real balancing act to be had because whilst you want to be able to do that, you don't always necessarily get the people that you would got a sort of a sense of the sort of in people that you would want to be part of the team or the gaps that you need to fill. You know, I always think in terms of, you know, it's almost like a circle. You've got these kind of three parts. You've got the commercial experience that you need as a pre-sales person, which is all around kind of your behaviors, your skills, the soft skills you need as pre-sales, the ability to understand the sales process and the go-to-market cycle and everything around that. Then you've got your domain or your industry experience. So can you talk the talk of the buyer? Can you say that you've walked in their shoes or at least be able to empathize with them? And then finally, there's the technology, not technical necessarily for all pre-sales or solution consulting roles, but technology and ability to translate technology into business value. That's what that piece is about. So I think when you look at your team, you probably see that you've got people that may be dialed up in some areas and not in others. And so you want to try and your team out that way, but it's often difficult to do that. And I think when it comes to, you know, my son, I have a son, my eldest son, he's autistic, and it's opened my eyes to the needs of neurodiverse individuals. And the reality is the standard recruitment techniques when you get people in front of you may not always work for neurodiverse individuals. So actually, we've got to start thinking about ways of when we get somebody into an interview, how do we ensure that we're actually peeling back the onion and getting into that individual's world and making sure that we can help them express themselves to the best of their ability as well. So it's actually that's a challenge for leaders, is making sure that you do the right thing in terms of recruitment.
So the idea is to give them the safe space, really, the opportunity to showcase themselves, not in the framework that we are used to, potentially. Even more difficult so for leaders to sort of move away from the curse of knowledge a little bit, of like, what is it that you know about the pre-sales world? What is it, the skill sets that you've already seen, that you know it is out there, and just shift your paradigm a little bit of what else is out there that can potentially, because even the phrasing you use there, and it's not, I'm not trying to obviously like poke you about it, but you know, there is a gap within the team. So you already have like this sort of preconceived, like, oh, okay, so we need to have like this subset of skills here because that's what we're missing. But sometimes as you open the doors pretty much and different people coming in, I imagine it's an incredibly difficult challenge for both you as a leader, for the recruitment, and for everyone involved in that process to think about specific individuals. It's like, oh, okay, that doesn't, you know, check all the marks. It doesn't actually fit the bill entirely. But oh man, do they bring this other, it's an incredibly valuable thing that we didn't even think about. Okay, how do we handle that? And yeah. I imagine that it's a rarity to have a framework in place to handle that.
There's an elephant in the room when it comes to recruiting pre-sales. And I've seen it over and over again, that part of the circle that is domain and industry expertise, oftentimes people will have a preconceived idea that to get that person in role, if you imagine that you've got somebody that has got a background in cloud platforms or platform as a service or something like that, and you're recruiting into cybersecurity, for example, well, if that person doesn't have cybersecurity understanding, now, admittedly, if you're hiring for somebody that's a principal solutions consultant that has to have that background and stuff. But you know, if you're not, somebody that doesn't have that doesn't mean they can't turn their hand very quickly to getting that experience. So, and it can be difficult not to discount people, because the elephant in the room is that you've got to be able to, as a solutions person, you've got to be able to talk the talk, or at least have the EQ to walk the walk of the individual that you're talking to allow them to feel like you're delivering value to them, right? And it's a difficult balancing act to try and find when you're trying to build out teams of, especially if you're trying to scale a team out. Because again, going back to our original point, if we're going to allow people to deliver outcomes and deliver value back to the business, we need to make sure that they can start delivering, their time to delivery of value has to be as quick as possible. Therefore, the onboarding has to be really, really well thought through, and it has to be robust. The reality, however, is that a lot of people will know, if you've ever been in an IC role, whether that's in a, you know, a mid-market or enterprise role, that something happens to every single pre-sales out there after 12 months and after 24 months. And I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. Happened to me in my previous life. But these kind of almost these automatic, these that muscle memory thing happens. That ability to go from consciously incompetent to unconsciously competent, that sudden thing, it just happens in two phases. And it seems to happen at those two markers. Now, whether that's down to the way we've done onboarding in the past or whatever, I don't know. But I just see that the way people just suddenly, they just pick things up suddenly at that point.
That is so strange that you say those exact times, because looking back at my career, that was exactly my
inflection points, right? They're inflection points.
Absolutely. My first one, that was the 6 months mark, which was, oh my goodness, I made a mistake, right? So that was the level where I realized, to your point, I realized how incompetent I am, because suddenly I was like, I know enough to realize, oh no, I know so little.
Yeah.
So that was the first one. And about the 12 month mark, that was the time where I was like, okay, so the crisis is over, right? I've realized that I can do this job. And I started delivering value in those 12 months time. And then the confidence build up, everything else. And about the 2 year mark was then the point where I was like, actually, I can do more, I can do better. And that was, incidentally, the time where I went to DemoFest for the first time and like presented a DemoFest for the first time.
There you go.
So that was really like cleanly, as you said, like 6 months, like crisis point, 12 months, like first realization that actually this is okay. And then the 2 year mark of like, actually, I can go further.
And whether or not, it's, you know, I don't know whether it's linked to, you know, the whole kind of expert being the 10,000 hour rule. I'm not sure whether I necessarily believe that, but I do think to some degree that we have these inflection points. But you know, what is really then incumbent upon pre-sales leaders is to make sure that we are doing everything we can to try and fast forward that time to help people be effective in role and start delivering outcomes as quickly as possible, right? And delivering value back to the business. I think what makes somebody able to fast track anything they do is to be coachable. And that goes for me as a leader as much as anyone else, right? I mean, for me, feedback is a gift. That's what I genuinely believe. And I think we should always take feedback in the spirit that it's meant, if it's delivered in the right way, obviously.
You didn't wake up one day, Rob, and it became a pre-sales leader. You did have an individual contributor role beforehand. And when we were talking about recording this, I liked one of the things you said, which is things that I would say to my younger self about this career, about this role and things like that. And I love that, because for me, like, for example, this podcast, I do this podcast for the younger me, you know, me 5 years ago that had no idea what she was doing in her life and suddenly found herself into pre-sales and would have loved to have listened to this. And I think that's a really good perspective to, like, what is the lessons and what are the things and how do we mentor people that, you know, for us to imagine just like, what did we need all that time ago?
Yeah.
So Rob, for you, like, what were those things that you wish you could just, you know, time machine yourself back and grab your younger self by the scruff and go like, hey, Rob, you need to do this, buddy.
Look, I think
professionally, yeah, I mean, there's some things in the personal life as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things I go back and tell my younger self not to do, I'll be honest with you, but having a personal network is really important. And I don't mean that in the context of just having loads and loads of people on LinkedIn, right? I mean a genuine personal network. And that is, you know, building relationships with people in your profession, both from a peer perspective, as well as a mentor perspective, and making sure that you've got people that will, I think it's great to have a sponsor and a mentor in your organization, because a mentor is somebody that will hold you accountable to goals and objectives that you want to set, right? And that's the idea of somebody being a mentor. But a sponsor is somebody who will talk on behalf of you when you're not there. It's what we all want in an organization, to help us get better at what we do. I'd say build up your personal network as quickly as you can. Get a mentor, find a mentor somewhere. And, you know, I think the five bravest words in the English language are, please, can you help me, right? I think actually asking for help is something that often we don't do enough. And I don't mean that in the context of, okay, I'm going to go to you with a problem and I simply want you to work it out for me. Our CRO has a phrase is, don't tell me what the weather is, tell me what to wear. And I think the reality is, it's like, if you can go to somebody with an idea of, okay, I know it's raining, you need an umbrella, rather than simply going to them with the, it's raining, what the heck do I do now? Because I need to go outside and I haven't got an umbrella and I've only got like paper thin shoes. That's not going, you need to have an idea of understanding and solving things, but asking for help in that context. So I think that's a big thing for me, is actually, I've been very fortunate both my sales career and in my pre-sales career, in that I've had very, very strong leaders that I've worked for, and I've learned the way I want to be a leader from very strong leaders. I'll be honest, good and bad, right? But strong leaders nonetheless. That's been very fortunate. But actually having people that aren't your direct leader, who can actually talk to you about the things that you want to try and accomplish and hold you accountable to that to some degree, is really, really something that I wish I'd done sooner when I was younger. And to be honest, I think, bearing in mind I started pre-internet, you know, that's giving away my age a little bit here, but I did. I think being able to make connections and build networks today is so much easier than when I first entered the workplace. However, I would argue that actually remote working is probably the biggest blocker now to people building personal networks, right? I mean, yes. There's almost this elephant in the room again of, okay, we've gone through this transition. We've got all of this amazing technology. We've got all these virtual kind of technology suites out there that allow us to make connections. But unfortunately, remote working ends up isolating us to some degree. So it takes effort to build your network, both inside your organization and externally. So put effort where you should, and that's where you should put effort. Yeah. And, you know, I would say to anyone that's in a situation where they're looking for help and they're not even sure where to start, we've got some incredible stuff out there in terms of technology now, where we can simply just chuck a query into ChatGPT and get a flavor for what's going on. The amount that I use the likes of Copilot and stuff like that now is, you know, it's daily. It's more than daily, right? It is something that is so, it's becoming second nature, really, to go and find that, just to get an idea, just to get a framework, to get a straw man of an idea. Even having that is, is a starting point. And I think if you genuinely are stuck and you're at a point where you literally have no idea, even just being able to state the fact that you've got an idea of the problem and you have no idea of the solution, but you've got probably an idea of what the outcome needs to be, even that piece, if you just have to fill in the gap, that's a great point, right? That's a great point to come to. And you know, I think most people, particularly in our profession, are just so willing to collaborate and help people out. And I think that's the most incredible thing about this industry. It really is.
I love this community. Everyone is so lovely. So honestly, just reaching out to folks, they will find it.
Oh, completely. You know, the first thing I did when I became a pre-sales leader was I rang the wonderful Don Carmichael, who I would love to see again very soon. And I just sat down with him for about 2.5 hours over a coffee. And he just basically gave me a list of names of people to go out and talk to. People like Chris Taplin, Adam Freeman, who was, you know, my predecessor here at Access and has gone off to do great things at Consensus. You know, all of these people who I'm now consistently in touch with, they're the people that Don sort of sat down with me and said, go out and talk to these people. And, you know, that's why I'm where I am today. And I can only thank Don and the people that I've had the luck of being able to interact with during my pre-sales career. And I can only thank them so much for the amount of help they've given me.
Rob is such an easy person to talk to, by the way. We could have spoken for another at least 3 hours. And if Rob is ever so gracious to actually join us again, I would love to have him as a part two, because there were so many topics that we just casually mentioned throughout that entire conversation that I was fidgeting and just taking wildly taking notes in front of me as Rob was talking. I'm like, oh, I want to talk to you about this. I want to talk to you about, the whole like idea of the sales circle. I want to talk to you all around the consumerization of B2B behavior. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about that. It's just like, so many things we can absolutely dive into just from that one short interview we had with Rob. But Paul, the most important question I have for you right now is that as you were listening through the interview with Rob, what was the topic or what was the thing that Rob said that top of your mind, what was the first thing that you, as you listened to, you said, ooh, I want to talk more about that, or that affected me, or
yeah,
that is my thing that Rob just said.
Okay, I will just come to, I think I would just echo what you said in that there is like 6 or 7 episodes worth of content just in that one conversation. The thing that really stuck out to me though was quite brief, and I think, well, like all of the things that you sort of, it felt like you were going kind of down a road and there are these billboards of topics, and Rob would start, he started off by saying master of the mid funnel. I was like, yes, that's it. And then consumerization of B2B behavior, yes. Industry transformation, yes. Leadership, yes. So much, big topic. But the thing that resonated with me, and anyone who has known me for any time will know that I am on the autistic spectrum. I have a family history of autism. The thing that really stuck to me, though, was when Rob actually, he touched on it very briefly. And I think it's telling how much of an impact it had on me that it was quite a brief piece that he said. But he talked about his son, who is auto-autistic. And I think the thing that, like you kind of writing down as I was listening, going this, oh, and this, oh, and this, oh, and this. We're not going to have time to talk about all of these things. And we should, full disclosure, even when we recorded this episode the first time, we barely touched on 70, 80% of what you and Rob got into. But I think what he said that really struck me is this notion that we need to be more aware of neurodiversity in the workplace, not just in pre-sales, but I think particularly in pre-sales, and that coming from that sort of mindset, it really set me off down a path of thinking, hey, I've never really thought about how it impacts what I do. I've always just kind of assumed, like, because I don't know any different, you kind of don't think about it at all. But actually hearing Rob sort of speak to it and hearing somebody of his tenure in the profession, of his, you know, respect and seniority, really calling that out just really resonated and kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. And like, okay. And actually got kind of quite emotional, if I'm honest, listening to it, because I was like, Yeah. But yeah.
I think it's important, and it was such an important note to take. I know we'll get the chance to dive into that topic a little bit more, but especially in the context, the broader topic that that sentence was a part of, about bringing our authentic selves, which is a power that we have coming into, especially such a heavy communication and relationship role that pre-sales is, being able to be, because you can't be anything else, you can only be yourself, but it's just about how is an organization structured and prepared and set up to be able to, maybe as awful as it sounds, but fully utilize you as a person and to provide you the space to really do the best work you can. It can only be if you can bring your authentic self, regardless if it is, you know, someone who has autism or any other neurodivergent aspects of their personality and their being. I think that conversation is, and as you said, especially from someone like Rob, who does have the tenure, the experience within the pre-sales environment, to have that mentality and that way of thinking was incredibly refreshing and almost comforting to hear as well.
Yeah, it was. And I think it emphasized the kind of the humanity side of it, right? The human side of what we do. And I think there is a tendency to not just for people who are neurodiverse, but just for anybody, right? You look at other people, you look at how they do things and how they operate, and you go, oh, you try and tweak and change what you do to what they do. And ultimately, it's like, well, no, you need to be your authentic self. And, you know, I've found kind of recently that both at work and in kind of professional spaces more broadly, so at community events, on the podcast, right, in the newsletter, on LinkedIn, bringing that authenticity is what resonates and actually is what people are looking for. People are not looking to buy from robots. Like, if they could buy from a robot, they would, right? The fact that they're talking to you as a human means that they want to have a human touch, that they want to have a human aspect. And that is also what's going to make you stand out, frankly, is bringing you and being your authentic self at work.
Throwback to my demo first session with Demobot 5000. Demobot 5000 can do all of the functions and features that we need as from a pre-sales person. The demos perfectly, but he has zero personality. So at the end of the day, it is really all about you as a person. And I love that Rob, you know, highlighted that throughout the conversation. And I think there is a lot more discussions to be had on that going forward. The thing that really struck me as I was listening to Rob and then re-listening to the interview once it was edited is this, first of all, the term Masters of the Mid-Funnel. That is going in a t-shirt. No questions asked, because it's such a cool term and it makes me feel so cool saying it. Masters of the Mid-Funnel. But also the evolution of the pre-sales roles in this gradual change from, this is what is maybe our core competency and our core role, but the reality is that it's turning also into a more central role within the sales, as we coined it with Rob, the sales circle rather than cycle.
Yes.
And I love this idea, because I think I was lucky enough in my career to sort of start as that evolution was starting. So I got to see the old world, what being purely those masters of the mid-funnel, but then also having more and more conversations about what is our actual true role now as we're moving on to the potential next era or stage of this profession. And there's a lot of, and in the interview, obviously, we discussed a lot of the different factors that are causing this change and how it, and what is the direction that from Rob's perspective we are going into. And it's just such an interesting topic to think about. Mm-hmm. And especially me personally, which are the activities and what is the action that I'm going to take, knowing this information, knowing that this evolution is happening, and what are then the new things or the different things I'm going to do in my career going forward to practically stay in tune, so I don't fall behind, so I'm not an old-fashioned professional. I'm someone that is like a little bit on the bleeding edge, a little bit, you know, forward-thinking, a little bit like looking at things out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having these conversations is incredibly important for that exact mentality shift.
Yeah.
There are also, there are so many nuggets in that entire interview, Paul. It's just, again, we can talk for another hour at least.
We can talk for an hour. And I also now really want to see a design for Masters of the Mid Funnel, but Masters of the Universe style. But I mean, like original, like 80, like, I don't know what it would be, something in the Masters of the Mid Funnel. But I agree, right? And I think the other one thing I think is worth just touching on is what Rob said about the role of leadership, because I think that is so, so critical. And I was actually having this conversation with some folks just yesterday, talking about, you know, we're saying there, the divergence of the role of SEs, SCs, of pre-sales people. And, you know, this is a profession which offers a huge path for development and fulfillment and earning potential as an individual contributor. It's also, I think, next to direct sales, is probably the only one where you can kind of go from one to the other and back. You know, it's not, you don't have to pick a path, right? You can kind of go and be an IC for a bit, and then you can go into leadership, and you can go back to being an IC depending on the company size or what really kind of suits you at that moment in time. But I think that what Rob said about leadership really just struck me. And I think there's two things that I really took away from that. And the first one is, leadership is not about you. It's about everybody else. And I think anyone who has aspirations of leadership in any capacity would do well to remember that. And I speak as a leader, right? As a people leader, you know, it is not about you. But the other side of that is that you don't need to have a team to be a leader, because leadership isn't about, it's not about how many people report to you. It's not about how many sort of, how many deals that your team closes, the size of your quota. It's about the impact you have. And I think Rob really nicely encapsulated that in the way he talked about it, in the way that, you know, he said that, yeah, I think it's this thing of, it's being people first, but it's also a real privilege to get to lead people. And I think it's really, really important that he picked up on that. And in that, right, the importance of finding people who are going to help you on that journey. So I would strongly recommend, I have listened to the interview twice. I need to listen to it probably at least a third time. As you say, there is so much in there, and we will no doubt revisit the conversation, and we'll absolutely look to have Rob back on at some point in the future. But for now, thank you to Rob. You can find him on LinkedIn, Rob Dean. And yeah, it was an absolute pleasure to have you as our first guest on the Wandering Tech Podcast.
Thank you so much, Rob. And all of the links pointing towards Rob will be in the show notes as well for the listeners. Please do reach out to him. And one of the things that Rob said, and I will repeat again, the pre-sales community is a wonderful place to be and to reach out to people and to create this true, actual, real networking exercise and actual relationships with people within the space to help you elevate, to get you to where you want to be. And I think that is such a privilege that we have, to have this sort of community, that people are always be so willing and open just to have a conversation with you wherever you are in your journey, however your whatever your aspirations are. You will find folks that, even if they are not the people to talk to you about this, they will point you to the right people. And I love Rob's story about this. And I know we say it every other episode, and not every episode, but me and Paul are also here. Please reach out to us if you ever want to have a chat about your pre-sales career, you know, wherever you're going, you want to get into pre-sales, just give us a shout. We'll do the best we can to help you on that journey, because it's the people who are with you on the path are the most important part of that journey. But if you do want to be a guest on the podcast, or you want to recommend someone that you think would be amazing to talk to and they have amazing ideas that they want to share with the world, please reach out to either one of us, really, on LinkedIn, as always, links in the show notes. Or you can reach out to either Paul or Lydia at solutionspathfinders.com. That is solutionspathfinders.com. And we'd love to hear from you. And until next time.
Bye.